Wake up weekday mornings, LI in the AM with Jay Oliver. Traffic and weather every 10 minutes on the 5s. And A Better Life with Dr. Sanjay Gupta on Suffolk County's news and information leader, 103.9 LI News Radio.
Well, the numbers are astounding as far as the unresolved cases in federal immigration court. And we'll tell you about that. Here to talk about it, Christopher Wirth. He's an immigration attorney out in East Quogue. And we welcome him to our program for the first time. Chris, Jay Oliver here, LI News Radio. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Jay. How are you? Thanks for having me.
It is a great having you. You know, I wanted to talk with you regarding some just alarming numbers. I think it was 80,000 people in the city and the island with cases that are unresolved, Chris, in federal immigration court. I know it puts the area, the metro area at least, at the top in a national sense as far as the backlog. It you know, includes deportation proceedings, I'm sure asylum petitions, you know, just incredible stuff happening right there. And when you look at Nassau combined, they're putting up some of the highest suburban numbers in the top 10 as far as the country. I mean, it is an incredible number right now as we speak, huh?
Yeah, it's a real big number, and it's nothing new. I mean, I think as the Newsday report talks about, it's been building up over the years, and the immigration judges have been saying to the federal government, hey, we need more resources, we need more money, we need more judges, and they've been pretty much ignored, and so it's snowballed.
And I was reading some of the comments from you in the paper as well that these cases really can go on and on and on here. You know, time really not of the essence when it comes to this stuff, right?
Well, it depends on the case. You know, sometimes you have an asylum case, and asylum is when someone's fleeing persecution in their country, and the government there won't protect them. So sometimes you have an asylum seeker who's here who still has family who's being persecuted, minor children, for instance, and they want their case heard as soon as possible because if they can get asylum, they can get their kids out of harm's way. We had a case like that about a year ago, and the backlog, you know, it was amazing. We told the judge, hey, we've got an exigent circumstance here. We need a date as soon as possible. I think this is in 2016, and we got a date in 2018. And so, you know, at that point, you need to make a motion to say to the chief judge, look, we need to accelerate this because, you know, someone's going to die or someone's going to be harmed. And in those types of cases, time isn't beneficial. You want to move as fast as possible. And the court did accommodate us and put us at the front of the list, and it worked out well. But, you know, in those types of cases, time isn't a benefit, but there's other types of cases where you do want time to develop the record. You know, you've got people who were the victim of a crime, for instance, and might be eligible for something called a U visa for crime victims who helped the police to investigate that crime. Now, a lot of times it happened a long time ago, and you want to take your time to collect evidence about what happened, to collect evidence about how the person may have suffered as a result and how they helped the police. And, you know, sometimes you're dealing with a jurisdiction in Arizona and a crime that happened 10 years ago, and nobody's got the records, and you don't want a court date 2 weeks from now, 2 months from now, because it's going to take some time to get your act together. So every case is different, but I think that on balance, most judges and practitioners are frustrated by, you know, the slowdown in the system overall.
No question about Christopher Wirth with us, an immigration lawyer. He's based in East Quogue. Chris, I was reading you actually keep a calendar, about a five-year calendar, to actually track the stream of cases, right, of unaccompanied minors, petitions, family petitions, as you brought up, asylum requests. You actually keep a little bit of a log here as far as exactly how everything transpires, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I could get a filing deadline for June of 2020. So I need a big calendar to make sure that that we stay on top of those cases. And, you know, we've got court dates currently scheduled for 2020, 2019. Sometimes we move those up, but no, there's a big backlog. And you know, it's good to see actually, in, you know, from one perspective, because that means that despite efforts sometimes, the judges are taking their time with the cases because they're very consequential. These people are in deportation proceedings. They're going to be separated from their families. A lot of them have most of their family here. And so you don't want to see these cases rushed, but at the same time, the judges should have more resources so that they can make these decisions a little bit more quickly.
And I was just going to ask you, and we're talking with Chris Worth, an immigration attorney out east. I was just going to ask you, Chris, about the demeanor of some of these judges. You know, does some exhibit, you know, the patience that's needed in so many cases? Obviously, I would think documentation, gathering all forms, is just essential as far as making a case. What about the demeanor of most of the judges that you come in contact with?
Judges are like anyone else. You have good judges and bad judges. I think in New York, it's one of the better jurisdictions to be in immigration court because you have a lot of judges who are patient and who do take the time to review the facts and who do, you know, devote due attention to everything that comes in front of them. So I think the demeanor of a lot of the judges is patient. But for the judges that have been there for a long time, I think that maybe the longer you be there, the tougher it is to have patience, just because of dealing with the backlogs and because of dealing with cases sometimes that aren't prepared, and the judges get frustrated by that. But usually, if the case is put together well, the judges will hear you out and give you a fair hearing.
Talking with Chris Worth, immigration attorney out in the East Quogue area, and talking about the nearly 80,000 people in New York City and on Long Island who have unresolved cases in federal immigration court. Ladies and gentlemen, Nassau and Suffolk combined, putting up the highest suburban numbers in the top 10 in the country. Suffolk with more than 13,000 pending cases, ranking fifth among counties nationwide. Nassau ranking ninth with 10,000 plus. So what about the latest, Chris, as far as just overall concerns? I would just think it's just insurmountable the way people are feeling right now, especially with what's happening in Washington, the back and forth, DACA, the 1.8 million, you know, the dangling as far as a concession to make sure somebody has their wall in place at the border, the president really looking for that wall. It's interesting how the back and forth and how many lives right now are on the line. We've seen families ripped apart. One family with the father having to head down to Mexico. A family that lived in the state of Michigan. We have seen situations like this and more to come. What about the overall concerns of people when they come to you? Obviously, this has to be a very big topic of conversation.
It is a very big topic of conversation, and rightly so. I think that, you know, one of the biggest effects right now of all this back and forth is that, as you touched upon, it's very unsettling, and it's very, you know, it instills a lot of fear in people. And I think that imagine living your life not knowing whether, you know, in 6 months or a year you're going to be allowed to stay. And then so the house that you've bought, the business that you've founded, the kids that you have in school, you need to figure out a plan to relocate that whole family unit to another place. And a lot of times the only other option, the country of origin, is someplace that is gang-infested with very little rule of law and where, you know, that family is going to be almost immediately extorted because they're coming from the United States and have built a life for themselves. And so I think that what I try to explain to people is, you know, one, let's calm down. Let's think about this rationally. In most cases, ICE isn't gonna show up at your door tomorrow. And let's think about a plan. And it's a matter of looking at someone's whole life and trying to figure out whether anything in that person's life gives them the ability to stay. And, you know, sometimes it's great. You know, good days here in my office are when we can say, hey, we found this availability for relief for you. You have a spouse who's a citizen. You filed a certain application back in 2001 that will allow you to, or 2000 will allow you to adjust status now. You fear persecution in your country of origin. Those are good days. But then there's other, you know, the same days, we're also meeting with people and saying, look, we've looked at everything, and there aren't any good options. You know, there aren't any good options for you to stay here legally. And, you know, everyone, a lot of people I hear that across the board, citizens, say, well, you know, why don't these people just do things the right way? Why don't they just, you know, follow the rules and become a citizen? But the problem is that a lot of times there's not that option. People pay their taxes. They have no criminal record. They've done all the right things. They're contributing to the community. But there's no law. There's nothing on the books that allows them to adjust their status despite being great people and despite having overwhelming support of their community. I mean, we've got someone who's detained right now who's got no criminal record, who's been here for a long, long time, who's got huge community support, and there's just no law there. And, you know, we're trying to find something, but a lot of times there's just nothing that will allow them to do the right thing. And so I think that what we try to explain to people, or how we handle people when they come to see us, is to just look at everything, to look at the whole history and find out, is there something or is there not? And then, you know, for the people who have an avenue for relief, that's great. They can focus on that. They can do what they need to do to get that. But for those who we have to say that there aren't any good options, it's a very difficult choice. I mean, they can go home and deal with whatever that brings, or they can stay, and then they're living in the shadows and living under the threat of deportation. And that's a very real threat now, because you have people being arrested more regularly for crimes that they wouldn't have been arrested for before. And then they're handed over to, you know, they spend a night in the county jail, and then ICE takes them, and then they're in immigration detention. And then at that point, it becomes very difficult to avoid deportation. Even if it's something, you know, even if the criminal interaction is something very minor, like, you know, having a driver's license from a different state.
No question.
That's kind of what we're seeing day to day.
A couple of minutes left talking with Chris Wirth, the immigration attorney out in the East Quogue area. And, of course, what I think muddies the waters even more so, Chris, is, you know, the unaccompanied minors. You know, obviously, right here on Long Island, we've got a very tough gang situation, mainly with MS-13, who come up from El Salvador and other countries from Central America. And, you know, that's always a big question of mine when I talk with politicians all around, is where do we stand as far as the Unaccompanied Minors Act? You know, we still don't know if it's actually enforced and enacted. And that, to me, also raises some very serious questions, especially with our current times here on the island.
Yeah, I mean, MS-13 makes it a very sticky issue, and obviously, you know, we don't want to all these problems that are happening down at, it's called the Northern Triangle, El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, replicating here in our schools and in our communities. I mean, nobody wants that. And you know, the police are focused on nipping that in the bud and trying to. But I mean, the unaccompanied minors program was designed to help you know, thousands of kids that it actually is helping right now. Children who were abandoned, abused, or neglected by one or both of their parents. And who it's not safe, you know, where it's not safe for them to return. And, you know, all of the clients that we've served here, and, you know, we've dealt with a lot of unaccompanied minors, you know, are in school, are learning English, are, you know, going on to college and to trade schools, and have escaped a situation that where they were in grave danger, and there were, you know, gangs were actively trying to recruit them, because that's kind of how it works down there. If you are 14 or 15 or 12 and your parents aren't there, or even if they are there, the gangs are going to try and recruit you, and if you don't join, then you're dead. And so a lot of these kids that are here because their lives were at risk, and they don't want any part of that. But there are some that that I guess get here and then are recruited here. So, I personally don't have a problem with the unaccompanied minor program. I think it's a good thing. I think that it's, you know, it speaks to what America's all about, and you know, that we have compassion. And, you know, the fact that there are gang issues now, there's been gang issues in this country since the time of Capone and before then, and it's, you just kind of deal with them as they come. But I don't think that the whole program should be scrapped because, you know, young boys and I guess some girls are getting involved with gangs. I mean, that's happened, I think, from time immemorial. And we're seeing it here now again, but it's, you know, you kind of deal with it as it comes.
No question about it, and certainly a very important topic of discussion, and we'll follow it along and hopefully have you back on down the road, sir.
That would be great. Thanks for the invitation.